Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith located in Sacramento, California.
We hope our podcast will help those who listen to grow in faith.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
We hope you find them inspiring.
We've been focusing during these 5 weeks on just one single verse from Acts, verse 8, chapter 1. We began the worship series looking together last week at what it means to witness in our homes in Jerusalem. And today we look from Jerusalem toward all Judea. And then in the coming weeks we'll look at Samaria and at the ends of the earth. Our question is, what and how does God call us to be witnesses in those places or in these places? And I want to begin by going back to worship last week. Actually, not the worship service, but right afterwards. We have a number of folks who are visiting us today for the first time, and we did last week as well. One of the people that I talked with afterwards, it was one of her very first times in church. And she is an artist, and she loved the music. So she wanted to talk with me afterwards. The music was on. It was right where she was. And it might not have spoken to everyone in this space, but the church has done the same music in a lot of places for a really long time. So trying some new things might be a breath of fresh air for some among us. It was for her. So she wanted to tell me that. But more than that, what she wanted to tell me was this. You didn't yell at me. You didn't tell me that I was going to go to hell. And no one screamed. And so I've grown up in a United Methodist church. Maybe we just set the bar so low that we can step over it. And it's like, all right, that was church. Nobody got yelled at. Nobody screamed. Nobody said everybody in here is going to hell. Whew. We did it. 1 hour down. Check. That was her impression. And folks, what I want to remind us of is that what we do in here might not feel to people outside of us that this could possibly be church. See, a lot of folks believe that when you come into church, you have to check your intellect at the door. That when you come into a church, you have to check your social convictions at the door. That they actually think that church is a place that you go to once a week or maybe every other week or whatever is in the image of how we practice going to church. But it's not what we're doing here. See, we seek for folks not only to bring their intellect, but to bring all of themselves into this space. That we root our lives in grace as we gather together as people of faith through worship, but that in and of itself isn't enough. That God longs for us to grow in faith as well. And so we do that around kitchen tables where we learn to witness or to share our stories with each other. And what we're focusing on during this time is how does doing those things, how does being together in that way call us then to reach in love? What we're doing in here seems somehow like it's radically different from what a lot of folks out in Judea, in our neighborhoods, think that we're doing in here. And as a person who grew up in the United Methodist Church and kind of a nice, loving suburban church environment, I have to remind myself over and over again of what people think Christianity is. And it's actually not that hard. I'm reminded of it oftentimes. Last night we were at a wedding, and at the table seated right next to us, we had folks who were Unitarian and Presbyterian and agnostic and atheist. And the dominant conversation is around how, like, church isn't that bad. Like, maybe some people go to church, but it's kind of a, this is how the phrase went, is I do think that you could be okay and go to church still. It doesn't mean that you're like not rational. But if the conversation is, can you possibly justify why anybody would do that? And so that's where we spent the time while we're all sitting in 107 degree temperature in the sun. If there's anyone rational here, it's not us. We're sitting in the sun when it's 107 degrees in this space. But that's how folks in Judea, those are the questions that we're thinking about. It's what we wonder about the church. In 1996, the Barna Research Group did a report. And what they found in 1996 is that 85% of people outside of the church, so in Judea, 85% of the folks had a positive impression of Christianity. That's a pretty strong group. 85% thought things that are happening in the church, you know, it might not be for me, but we have a positive impression of it. And then a decade later, they did this, and 38% of young people, so it had more than doubled. These are folks didn't have a positive impression, but 38% thought that Christianity was just terrible. Their bad impression was that in present-day Christianity, it's all about us versus them. And so in the matter of a decade, public opinion in Judea about what's happening in the church radically shifted. We're not in Kansas anymore. These are what the folks thought about the church. The most common thing that people thought about the church, 91% of people, church is anti-homosexual. 91%. 87% church is judgmental. 85% it's hypocritical. 75% it's too political. 72% it's out of touch with reality. 78% it's old-fashioned. 70% it's insensitive to others, and 68% just said it's plain boring. So it's pretty clear how people think in Judea about Christianity today, about what's happening in church communities. I want to take a step back. Some of us might not be quite sure where Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and all these places are. So I want to show us, here's a map of ancient Israel during the time of Jesus. So what you see kind of in the middle bottom, you see Jerusalem, where we were last week, and home. And then down below, you see the word Judea written in darker, big font. Judea is this whole region that you see around, so much bigger. Jerusalem, the city, Judea, the entire region. And it bumps up against Samaria, where we'll spend time next week. And you'll hear in Jesus' stories, folks from Judea, if they were to travel north, they actually would go around Samaria. I'd rather go around Samaria than through Samaria. We're going to spend time next week. What are the places that we'd rather go around than through? Who are the people we want to avoid so badly we cannot even go in the vicinity? So this just gives us a little bit of context. When Jesus, the risen Christ, says these words in Acts 1:8, this is the space that he's talking about. You will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you. You'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. I want to remind us of where we are in Acts 1:8. In Acts 1:8, what we find is we have Jesus, the risen Christ. So Jesus has just been put to death by the powers that be. And the followers of Jesus are gathering around Jesus in this space, the risen Christ. And this is right before Jesus goes back to be with God and the Holy Spirit comes upon us. That's where we are in this moment. And in front of us, we see the ancient Greek word for witness. Do you see it right in the beginning of the word? The root of witness in the ancient Greek is martyr. That's a different impression than folks have about what witnesses of Christian faith are today. We just talked about all the different things that people think about Christian witnessing and what Christian witnesses are. This is what the Greek word was martyr. See, those early followers of Jesus who were witnesses, they were martyred. And so those two words melded and blended together. These are the same folks that, as the New Testament was being written in the first century, this strange and hopeful group of people were living out their lives in such a way as to say that Jesus is the one that they're going to put their trust in, not Caesar. And so to say that I'm going to put my trust in this God, not in the ruler of this space, we can imagine how much trouble that gets folks into. We can imagine how witnesses, folks that witness to that truth, actually were martyred, because Caesar doesn't like it when you find other folks to have more power and hope than he does. We talked last week about the motley crew of folks that were called out to witness, right? Sometimes we say, I couldn't possibly witness. I don't have my stuff together. I'm going to get caught in all the contradictions that I live in. So I just want to remind us for a second, the witnesses that Jesus sent out in that way, it's Peter who had just gotten done saying, I don't know that Jesus dude. Nope, still don't know him. Nope, not sure who he is. That's who was called out to be a witness. Or it was Paul, who Fred Craddock says, Paul has blood up to his elbows because he's trying to kill the church, to stab the church while it's still in the cradle. That's who Jesus sends out to be a witness. Over and over, the folks that Jesus calls out to be witnesses are the folks that are stumbling around. Maybe folks like you, or maybe folks like me. But witnessing has gotten so distorted over the last number of centuries that most of us want to have absolutely nothing to do with it. I was in a kitchen table earlier this week, and someone talked about when Linda preached a sermon on the United Methodist Church in 2008, it added to its membership vows that we will support the church, the ministry of God in this place, through our prayers, our presence, our gifts, and our service. And they added witness in 2008. See, the church had forgotten that witness was the original thing that Jesus sent them out to do, so we had to add it back into our book of discipline in 2008, and that made a lot of folks, I'm guessing a lot of folks in here, really uncomfortable. We're going to what? Prayers? Okay, maybe. Presence? I can do that one. Gifts? I'm okay there because nobody really defines what that means. Service? I like service. I can really do service. Witness? That could be a deal breaker for a lot of folks because of the ways that we misunderstand, I think, what witnessing is. So I'm not an attorney, and I know there are attorneys in here, but I'm going to do my best, and you can tell me afterwards how bad I get this. But witnesses are not in a court of law. Witnesses are not the prosecutors. Witnesses are not the judge. Witnesses don't decide the case. Witnesses don't stand up and say everything about themselves. Witnesses are asked questions. So first they have to actually listen to what the question is, and then they have to share as honestly as they can about the part of the story that they know, about the part of the story that they have literal experience with. That's what a witness does. And I think we've confused that. We found three ways that I want to lift up that I think we've really screwed up witnessing. And the first one is one that we started with. The first way that we screw up is we go out talking too much, right? We go with the bullhorn. It's last week when this young woman was like, wow, it was so great to be at church. You didn't even scream at me. You didn't yell at me. See, some followers of Jesus have run out with bullhorns, believing that they hold the truth and they just need to speak it louder than anyone else. But instead, we're called to listen. Leonard Sweet writes about listening in this way. Parents tell children something that no child likes to hear. This is what they say. Don't speak until you're spoken to. And I grew up in Texas. That's an okay. That's maybe in California, parents don't actually teach that. In Texas, we definitely learned, don't speak until you're spoken to. It's one of the earliest lessons that we fail to learn at our own peril. Whether we like to hear it or not, though, there's a deep truth within it. Nobody can ever really speak until they're spoken to. Cambridge theologian Nicholas Lash puts it like this. We cannot speak unless we are spoken to. All speech is, in the last resort, response. And St. Augustine, 1,500 years earlier, says it this way. Each one of us has learnt our native language by habitually hearing it spoken. And we have little children, Anthony running around right now. He's learning the language that he's hearing his family speak. Some of us are learning two languages in our families. We have kids that are running around learning the languages that their mothers and fathers speak, Spanish and English. But we're first spoken to. And we have found other ways to screw up witnessing as well. It's not just that we're loud. One of the other ways that we've approached witnessing as followers of Jesus is we think that we're going to take God to the godless. And so our point, our purpose, is to take God from here to all those godless people and then bring God to them. Or the inverse of that is we think we're going to bring the godless people into church and they're going to find that God is here in this place. Okay, the deep trouble with this problem is that that's not what Jesus says. God is everywhere, in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, and the ends of the earth. Our task isn't to bring God to the godless, it's to be with people in all of those places, pointing to where God is. One person, George Strope, describes it this way. Too often, churches have understood themselves to be taking God to a godless world rather than following God into a world in which God is already redemptively present. So God goes before us now and always. So maybe our task then is to listen to folks in Judea and then to notice where God is emerging in that space and to give voice to it in response. But before we move in that direction, I want to name a third place that I think we stumble in understanding what witnessing is. See, I think we actually get stuck, some of us. We get stuck thinking that God did all of these miraculous things to folks several thousand years ago. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring folks to read Scripture, and they're going to see how God was then, and that's the purpose. Leonard Sweet says, though, it's not the great I was, it's the great I am. That's who we're called to follow, the great I am, not the great I was. We're not taking people to say, look what God did way back in the day. Let me show you. It's written right here. We're noticing where God is alive and breaking through in our own lives, in this moment, in the world around us, in the lives of our neighbors in this space. Jim Collins, who wrote a book called Good to Great, that everybody that's done anything around leadership started to read a decade or so ago. One of his mentors is the founder of Common Cause. And his mentor said to him at one point, you spend so much time, Jim, I like just being able to call him Jim, you spend so much time, Jim, trying to be interesting. Why don't you invest more time being interested? And Collins responded that, if you want to have an interesting dinner conversation, be interested. If you want to have interesting things to write, be interested. If you want to meet interesting people, be interested in the people you meet, their actual lives, their histories, their stories. Where are they from? How did they get here? And what have they learned? By practicing the art of being interested, the majority of people become fascinating teachers. Nearly everyone has a story to tell. The great theologian Paul Tillich writes that the first duty of love is to listen. So what if our task in witnessing, in reaching in love in Judea, is to listen to the folks around us, in our neighborhoods? Where do we see God taking shape? And here's the catch. Here's the trouble, I think. For a lot of us, we stumble away from church. We stumble away from these sacred stories. We don't show up for a kitchen table where we grow in faith together. And then we start to forget the stories. And then we start to see them around us, but we don't have the words to say them. And then we get upset with ourselves, thinking that I missed my moment. We gather in faith to root our lives in grace here and then to grow in faith together in our kitchen tables because we need practice witnessing in Jerusalem. We need to be reminded of how God's story takes shape around us, so we need to hear it. We need to listen to it ourselves. That way, when we're in our neighborhoods, we can begin to see it when it takes shape. But more than that, we need to be reminded that God is watching over us in love. And then as we miss those opportunities, we share those misses, and then the next times they arise, we start to see them anew. Some of us have tried this. Two of our young leaders have transitioned in their workplaces, and they're thinking about where they're journeying to. So on Mondays, they've been going out to Soilborne Farm, and they've been making lunch there at Soilborne for folks. What I love about the image of Soilborne Farm is this. Some folks, even amidst us right now, have redirected their entire lives to be a witness around reaching in love through Soilborne Farm. They were going in this direction, the Mercedes, as the song that Benoit sang before, the Benz. And then they find another calling, God's calling, to witness in this other way. And others of us are in a space where we're not sure, so we're testing out what's going on out at Soilborne, just to see if that might be a way to reach in love. Others of us are between work, or we're working full-time jobs, but we're taking on projects like that to figure out how God is calling us to reach in love. But these two young people were out there on Monday. And at Soilborne, if you've ever been out there to try to make a meal for someone, the bad news is you just get the vegetables that are there. And if you're like me, I need cookbooks, so I need lots of them. And I would bring a truckload of them with me. If you're like my partner, Sarah, you'll be fine. You just cook with what's there and it works. These folks were handed one of the main vegetables that just came in that they're going to work with. It's beets. Okay, not a fan of beets, personally, right? And other folks might not be a fan of beets either, but that's what's grown right now. We're going to eat in season, and we're going to learn, I keep telling myself, we're going to learn to like this, right? And so they prepared something that someone sat down at the table and had these beets and thought, huh, these are beets. I could do this. I could eat this way. I could make this myself even. This doesn't even seem that hard. How did you do this? So the person started to ask them, how did you go about making the beets in this way? And they share about it. They talk about it a little bit. And then the conversation carries on. And the person at some point brings up, so why are you here? And if you've ever been out to Soilborne, it's kind of like the wedding I was at last night. It's actually not a safe place to talk about, I'm a person of faith, or I'm here because God calls me to reach in love with my neighbors. You lead with that thing, and Antonio can give me an amen on this. People look at you like, I'm going to find my way to pull some beats over down on that side of the field. This person's a little Lulu. But these folks had the courage to say, in some words, why they're there. I'm here because we're part of a community of faith, and our community of faith calls us to reach in love. And so that's what Soilborne Farm does. That's why we're here. We're trying to figure that out. And this person thought, just like they thought the beets could never be anything worth tasting, they're equally as certain that Christianity, that God, is equally irrational, and why in the world would anybody want that? But just like beets, can't we make church into something that folks long to actually be with, that can actually sustain someone's hunger? Isn't that exactly what Jesus was doing when he was gathering folks who were stumbling around, and he sent them off to make meaning and purpose in their own lives? He gathered them at this table. Jesus invited his friends long ago to the table to share in the bread of new life. And as we prepare to share in this simple sacred meal, I invite us to join our hearts and our minds, our lives together, confessing our frailties before God and one another.
As we move towards Judea, each of us is reminded of how deeply our neighbors do distrust witness. And we're reminded of how uncertain we are about our abilities to be witness. And we wander and we wonder.
Even though I have read my Bible in a year, do I still have a place welcome for me, waiting for me here? Even though you saw me in the bar last week, do I still have a place that's safe for me to speak? Even though I curse on the court playing ball, do I still have a place that can care for me at all? Even though my parents, some hippies of a new age, burning incense, can this still be my place? Even though I feel a little different from you, Can I still have a place where I can come and feel renewed? And even though I shout during the service in my wheelchair, can it still be a place where people still care?
As we reach towards Judea, we're reminded again of how deeply our neighbors distrust witness. And we're reminded too of how uncertain we are about our ability to witness. And we keep on wandering and we wonder.
Even though I love somebody of the same sex, do I still have a place where I can learn about God's text? Even though my wife and I can't get along, do we still have a place to come and sing God's song? Even if I have a personality disorder, do I still have a place where I can come bathe in God's water? Even though HIV is affecting me, do I have a place where I can come and finally just be free? Even though I'm homeless and I struggle to eat, do I still have a place to come keep me off the street? And even though I can't speak English that well, do I still have a place where I can come and get help?
The church's witness has often been so violent and so exclusionary. God's grace is not like that. God's grace is otherwise, and we are God's children, and this is God's place. So may we here this day and every day embrace all of God's people as we sing.
Even though I speak in tongues and raise my hands to God, do I still have a place here, really, on the church squad? Even though I sit, complain, and don't sing, do I still have a place where I can come and do my thing? Even though we're all sinners and we all fall short, can we be the place where we just come to the Lord? Break bread together, sing hymns together. For all of God's children, we can bring them together. Even though sometimes I can't run the race, I'm still God's child, and this is still God's place.